Thank you, everyone, for attending. It's going to be, even though this is the Tomcat track, this is going to be very, very focused on the Apache web server side of it, basically how to configure the Apache web server to be a front end to Tomcat. So all the particular details associated with it and stuff like that is what we'll be talking about. I put my thanks slide as my second slide, so that way if you want to take pictures of where the slides are going to be and stuff like that, you can do that, not wait until the very, very end. Basically, everything I do is always going to be on SlideShare / JimJag, and of course, the PagetCon site itself will have the slides available up there as well. A little bit about me. I've done a lot of stuff with a lot of open source things. I love open source. And I'm lucky enough to be employed by a really cool company called Consensus, who does Ethereum blockchain stuff. So this is the agenda. First thing I do is I'll talk about what we won't be talking about, nice, complete, comprehensive list, and then some of the things that we will be talking about. Since this is a relatively small group, please don't hold off any questions until the very, very end. If you have any questions as they come up, if I'm not, you know, if something isn't clear or something like that, don't hesitate to raise your hand, ask questions and stuff like that. As I said before, the slides are going to be up. So even if we don't go through the slides, as long as we go through all the topics, and I'm going to really gauge that on your feedback and things like that. As you can see, some of the things we'll be talking about, again, has a very, very relatively nuanced Apache HDBD focus. Some of the things I won't be talking about, nonsensically enough, is how to set up Tomcat itself, how to set up the HTTP listener connection, the AJP connector, things like that, the normal things you need to have Tomcat operating in the back for Apache to speak to it on the back end. I also will not be talking about ModJK, which is one of the modules that are used on the Apache web server that allows it to speak AJP, you know, the Tomcat native protocol between Apache web server and Tomcat on the back end. That does not mean I will not be talking about AJP, the protocol. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. So if you're looking on far as how to interface Apache HDPD with Tomcat and you want to speak AJP, I'll show you how to do that without necessarily using ModJK. I also will not be talking about ModCluster, which is a Red Hat-specific project. I think it's a very, very cool project. John Fricknick is here, so if you have any questions about that, he'd be more than happy to ask and answer. Obviously, some other talk was filled to the brim, and so welcome. There are free pens in the back, so please feel free to take some, and there's nice water back there as well. So as I said, let's talk a little bit about Apache HDPD. We're currently at 2.4.35. In fact, that just got released maybe one, two, 3 days ago, something like that. There are significant improvements in there. What I'll be talking about specifically in this particular track are the improvements that make sense as far as Apache being a front end, a reverse proxy, and the design drivers associated with that. For example, 2.4, if you didn't know it, is fully async, event-driven. You can have that NPM, the event NPM, that allows you to basically operate in a non-blocking asynchronous mode out there. There's also a growing number of usable NPMs out there. Some of these are somewhat experimental and in testing phase and things like that, but again, we've added more capabilities inside there. We're using APR in the same way that Tomcat uses APR for really, really good high-performance OS compatibility aspects in there, and basically all the good normal mom and apple pie kind of things associated to what you would want to expect from a really, really cool stuff. For me, I think the biggest design driver for the web server has been the impacts of the cloud and cloud-based technologies out there. It really is the game changer for a lot of different reasons out there. I think the most important considerations are, first of all, we want to automate things as much as possible, not only by creating the normal traditional shell scripts and bash scripts and stuff like that that we've always done as sysadmins, but try to push some of that logic, some of that intelligence actually into the server itself. The other thing is that horizontal scaling is now much more viable you know, yeah, you used to be able to do it, but then you'd have to go and recreate things, and it wasn't as easy. It was just easier to buy a bigger, heftier, you know, beefier machine. The cloud has really changed all that. And these impacts have filtered down to the design of actually the Apache web server out there. So why does the dynamic reverse proxy matter? Is that really Apache HTTPD, there might be some debate or discussion about that, but really when you look about it, it really is the most popular reverse proxy out there. NGINX is certainly making a name for itself, but especially when you're talking about Tomcat, Apache and Tomcat are kind of sort of like the kissing cousins of the ASF. That's just, you know, the way it works out there. So all the things must be really dynamic friendly, and Apache is really trying to focus on that out there. I also want to make sure that we're kind of clear on naming. Pedantically, something which is a proxy server is actually a forward proxy. And a forward proxy is an environment where the outside world doesn't see the clients. It has no idea where the clients are. That's different from what we're talking about, which is the reverse proxy. The reverse proxy is such that the outside world doesn't see all the bits and pieces that actually comprise your web experience, your web interface out there. It's that protection. As far as the outside world is concerned, the only thing it sees is this reverse proxy server. All this right here is broken on the back end. So even though sometimes we just say, hey, it's a proxy server, pedantically, it's really a reverse proxy server. And that's the only one that we're thinking about out there. So what are some of the reasons why people want to have a reverse proxy server, specifically in front of Tomcat, you know, and other web servers and other web instances out there? Well, first of all, one of the main criteria is the aspect of security. Because you are in an environment where the only way to access and touch these bits and pieces right here is through this central choke point, you can ensure that all your ACLs, everything that has to do with security, everything that has to do with authentication and authorization, all that kind of stuff can be handled uniformly and in one central location instead of bothering with replicating it all here, you know, on the back. It also ensures that you can place everything else which might be sensitive behind an actual firewall. So there's actually no reason for these to have a direct connection to the unwashed public out there on the internet, because the front-end server allows you to do that. The other thing is, of course, delegation. You can have different servers on the back end designed and configured and set up for different environments. As we know, there isn't one size fits all as far as web servers and web instances. The loads and demands for an image-based service is different from an application-based service, and if the application-based service is Java-based or PHP-based or Ruby-based or whatever, all those make differences as far as how you set up and configure the web server, the application server, the machine, the OS, and stuff like that. So it allows you to make that sort of specialization on the back end to get the most bang for your buck. Another very important thing, especially with Tomcat, is the very fact that you can offload SSL. You're not having to worry about configure Tomcat on the back end to be an SSL server and the issues or possible issues associated with that. You can use Apache on the front end, which uses OpenSSL. It's very, very fast, very reliable. And that means that you can then talk something more open, something more clear text, for example, on the back end. And we'll talk about things later on like that. Obviously, you know, there was talking later on earlier that the Tomcat APR, the native APR listener, might be going away sometime soon. So that might be another concern. So the reason why you're front-ending everything with Apache. Two other big things is that caching, being able to reuse a reverse proxy as a caching server. So everything that isn't dynamically generated, static content that you may be getting from the back end, if the reverse proxy can cache that, you're going to get much better performance. And that all comes down to performance, high availability, load balancing, and we'll talk about that. So some of the design drivers that we pumped into, I talked about that before, basically becoming a kick-ass generalized reverse proxy server that's designed to satisfy a huge swath of different use cases and things of that nature. Also, we wanted to support the huge number of protocols and communication mechanisms and methods between a front end on the back end. So yeah, we talk HTTP, HTTPS, HTTP2. We also use Connect, FTP, AGP, FastCGI, SCGI, WSGI, UWSGI, the HA proxy, proxy protocol. If there's a way for a front end to talk to a back end, chances are very, very good that we've got a protocol module that allows you to speak that language. So if what you want to do is just change things and move things in the back, you know, and with as minimal touch as possible, you don't have to worry about reconfiguring your listener. For example, on Tomcat, you can just use it natively in Apache. We'll talk to it. No worries. Load balancing, clustering, failover, all the normal basic things you think about in a reverse proxy nowadays is also something that we design drivers on. This is basically just a summary of that. I won't go into all of that. I will talk about basically the whole idea of how, from a front end, how you start configuring Apache to do that. First of all, and this is a real catch, is make sure that this command, set proxy request, is set to off. And this is a holdover from the days when, as I said before, proxy and proxy requests were considered forward proxy requests. If this is set to on, you're saying, oh, well, I'm setting it up as a reverse proxy, so of course I want a proxy request. I should set that to on. If you do that, you're actually setting yourself up as a forward proxy, which is a security nightmare. So just make sure that that is off. It's off by default, but just, you know, in the off chance you say, you know, you've hired somebody to do it, make sure that's off. And then use some of these commands that we'll talk about later on to actually set up that wiring between how the front end talks to the back end. The heavy lifter, as far as these configurations are concerned, is this command right here called proxy path. And it basically maps the front end requests to the back end in this example right here. And just using this as an example, it's saying that anything that comes in, any URL that comes in that is prefaced with the dash secure dash URL path in front will actually be handled, sent, forwarded, proxied to this backend server right here. There's a lot of magic associated with that we'll talk about a little bit later on, but that's basically the content behind it. We're basically mapping an incoming URL to a location that needs to be handled on the backend. And obviously, as I said before, the presumption is that secure server isn't directly accessible. So it's running on an independent IPv6 or IPv4 IP address, you know, something of that nature. And you can get much more sophisticated, for example. We'll go through all these examples in a little bit. There is sort of like a companion to the proxy pass directive, which is called proxy pass reverse. This has a very simple, unique, and targeted use case. This is designed for one trouble, one issue, and one issue only. As I said before, the whole idea behind a reverse proxy is that the outside world should not have any idea what's on the back end. There should be this semblance, there's nothing at all back there. Everything's on the front end server. Well, every once in a while, you know, a request will come in that the server will say, okay, I know what you're asking for. Okay, it's not here, but I know where it is. Let me tell you where it is so you can request it. This is the location header that's sent by a web server. It basically says, oh, you want to, you know, I know what you want. This is where you get it. The problem is that this location header specifies the full URL, which includes a self-referential name to itself. Now, if that location header is being generated by something in the back, and that leaks out to the public, then the public will see this URL and gives them some kind of idea or clue on how that back end looks. It's sort of like a secret that's not secret anymore because you're sort of like exposing what's behind the door. The proxy pass directive has one purpose, and that's to scrub out the host name and port number of that back-end server and replace it with the host name and port number of the front-end server. That's all it's designed to do. Now, some people say, well, that's a really, really stupid thing to have for one specific command. I can imagine that happens all the time. Why don't you just lump proxy pass and proxy pass reverse into one directive and just have proxy pass reverse just generically do that. In the old days, that was pretty viable. It was a good suggestion because there was always this one-to-one map that whatever was on here on the back end would also be mapping there. But as we come up with more sophisticated wiring between the front end and the back end, that's no longer the case. There will be scenarios, and we'll talk about those a little bit later on, where what we need to look for as far as inside that location header is going to be different from what we sent back. So this might be true, but that mapping might be different. It might be actually something different that we want to look for to complete that masquerade on the back end. So basically, for a very, very simple a reverse proxy scenario, let's look at this example right here. This basically says anything that comes in for slash images will be sent to this back-end website. This is the host mapping to an IP address. This is the scheme or the protocol that Apache will be talking to the back-end. This is the URL path that needs to be looked at and targeted or tagged for that to happen, and that's basically the command. Now, this is not really new. It's not really, really sophisticated. People have been doing this for a long period of time, and it wasn't until maybe like the second or third person who used this that said, oh, that's great, but it's not complete enough. What happens if that goes down? What happens if, for some reason, images.example.com is getting hammered with requests? How can I add more stuff to it? How do I complete this? And that's why we came up with the idea of clustering and load balancing inside of the Apache web server itself. Before I actually talk into the actual logistics of how to create a cluster, we do have the idea of load balancing between these actual backends by a couple of native load balancing protocols. The first, of course, is just by tagging the number of requests. We load balance between, okay, if this person gets 5 requests, we want to make sure that this node also gets 5 requests, assuming that they're equally, beefy machines. We can also look at the amount of traffic that's being generated. Traffic is both incoming as well as outgoing. So if one machine is sending out a lot more traffic than the others, I want to load balance between those inside of there. A busyness is basically how many times they've been accessed, how many times they've been bothered or gone ahead and said, hey, I want to go and send a request. That's always very, very good with Tomcat as well. There are going to be some other ones which are being added later on. All these things are determined by what we call load balance factors or LB factors. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. I want to remind people, because I know a few people came in late. If you have any questions as I go through, don't wait until the end. Just raise your hand. I like having a dialogue rather than a monologue out there. Okay, so, yes?
So I've tried to set this
up with That's right. That's right. That's a very, very good point. Yes. Yeah. His point was that there used to be documentation where we were very, very inconsistent as far as that trailing slash and that trailing slash. And what would happen is sometimes, if you just had slash secure, if the URL is like slash secure slash foo.gif or secure my website, sometimes that would be tagged and sometimes it wouldn't. So because it's basically just a, for lack of a better term, a pattern match, a very, very dumb pattern match or a glob, it's very, very important that you make sure those are matched inside there. I'll talk a little bit later on that you can actually make this an actual regex pattern as well. And then you can have that match pattern in the space afterwards as well. But that's a very, very good point.
Is there a performance issue?
There's always a performance issue with regex. that's just what regex is. But really, for most of the things that you're going to be looking at, it's a pretty simple, dot star, dot whatever. So the performance impact, especially if there are times you need to do that. okay? I would definitely recommend not using mod rewrite as your regex engine, using proxy pass match or proxy pass with the regex alternative inside there. But it's not anything that you would really see in the real world unless you've got some enormously nasty regex that happens to be constantly being hit and stuff like that. Okay. So the whole idea of what we're trying to create, and I'm sorry to throw another, you know, term into this. I mean, everybody's got their own different names for what do you call these big globs of, you know, servers on the back end. We came up with the idea of cluster. I guess because, you know, we're fans of those like pecan and cashew cluster candies. Those are really, really good. So why not throw a little bit of, you know, happiness into it? That's the idea behind it. And so what we're doing is we're preloading the proxy parameter right here, and we're creating, now we're calling it a balancer. So like I said, we're not very, very good at being consistent. But what we're doing is we're creating a balancer cluster called foo. And we're saying inside this, this balancer cluster, we're having three external nodes. Balancer member, the first one is www1 example, the other one's www2, another three. I won't go into all of these things in a little bit, but basically this is the whole idea of how you define what those backends are. You set what sides, what those backends are, you set some parameters regarding how beefy they are, you know, what kind of performance issues, things of that nature, and then you tell Apache how you want to balance, load balance between those things inside of there. These tags right here help you fine-tune environments, help you fine-tune how Apache will balance the communication between itself and this node back here. And I want to go through some of those configuration parameters. The first one that we saw right here is what's called load factor. And just think of that as sort of like a normalized feel for how powerful that machine is, or alternatively, how much more traffic you want this web server to handle rather than that web server. So on average, www2 will get twice the amount of traffic that www1 was. If this was by request, then it would be twice the amount of requests and things of that nature. It's just some sort of, you know, normalized, you know, differentiating pattern inside of there. That's what load factor is. A load balancer set is a different sort of idea. If you want to think of the whole idea about, you know, failover, how can you fail gradually, okay? And the LB set allows us to define sets of subsets of subclusters such that if this set goes away, we're then going to fail over to this subset, and then we'll fail over to a different subset. I have got a pretty good diagram about that later on, but I just wanted to give you a little bit of a feel or a taste on what that's going to be coming up with. Some of these parameters I won't really go into because they're not really that important or that fun or that sexy. What's really important is that with Tomcat, especially if you're talking the AJP protocol, because it is a binary protocol, sometimes you need to worry. Sometimes you need to flush those binary packets through the pike. And so we have a couple parameters right here that allow you to basically automatically convince Apache that, hey, every time you send something, make sure that HTTP request is fully set. Flush those packets. You know, you might want to go and wait before that's happening. Sometimes you'll need those, sometimes you won't. But we have a couple of parameters in here. And again, if you're used to ModJK, some of those may be familiar to you. Another cool parameter we have is ping, which allows the Apache to, before it goes and sends the request to the back end, to basically just quickly see if that server's up and running. For an HTTP request, it uses an options request. What's nice about AJP is it has CPing, SingPong, which is incredibly fast, incredibly quick, incredibly efficient. And so if you're talking AJP to Tomcat on the back end, that ping parameter will automatically use that. You don't need to say, hey, you know, I'm talking to Tomcat, handle it differently. It'll do that for you already. There are a couple ways of also determining what happens. You know, the status of each of those backend nodes. These are dynamic parameters, but can also be set, as we saw in an earlier example right here, we're setting a static plus H. What that means is this, that one parameter right there was a hot standby, which meant that as the requests were coming in, only these two would be handling the requests. That would never be accessed because it's on a hot standby status. If www1 went down, then all the traffic would be going to www2. Okay? It wouldn't be until both 1 and 2 were down that 3 would kick in because it's a hot standby. I'm not going to worry about it until all my primary ones are available. So that's sort of like the example of the failover balance. And then what you could do is have another set of these called www4, which are further backups, which are in a different load balancer set, which are basically other failovers inside there. What's also nice is that Apache is smart enough that if www1 or 2 comes back up, that immediately gets taken off the route. You know, of course, if there's like a sticky session or something like that, the request will keep on going on that. You know, you're not going to cut the legs off of a request, but it's smart enough to keep on trying those back ends. Yes? That's a really good question. I actually have a scenario about that a little bit later on. The question was basically, you know, why not just use all three? Why have this whole idea of a backup? And the long and short of it is that it's maybe these are in your local network center or something like this. This might be something externally that you've got to pay extra for. You know, it's in a different NOC or it's a different hosting company or something like that. And so you want to be able to really have a smart idea where things are going. As I said before, I won't go through through all of these parameters right here. This is one we've seen before, the load balancing method. You can also, there are a couple ways of actually setting some of these parameters. You can actually use, as we saw before, actually inside the proxy pass directive. If that doesn't make sense or because if you don't like that one, you can actually use a proxy set, which basically says set this balancer with that parameter right there. We also have inside of here the idea of connection pooling, which means it's a hell of a lot easier and more efficient to have these connection pools already up and running if you know you're going to be connecting these backends consistently. They only make sense for named backend servers. For example, in this scenario right here, we know we're going to be generating traffic to bar.example.com. So it makes sense to open up this connection and keep that socket up and running inside there. For all the threaded NPMs, including the worker and the event NPM, it's an actual pool, which you can adjust the size, number of connection pools you have, as well as the time to live, the expiration dates, and things of that nature. For a pre-fork, because it is a forked web server, I don't know anybody who runs the pre-fork anymore, but just in case, you know, you still have a connection pool, but it's just one. Yes? Oh, proxy pass is the actual command that says, for this request coming in, this is where you send it. And, oh, by the way, this is a little configuration parameter which defines how this request handles or how that balancer handles. Basically saying, oh, and for every request that comes in, have the timeout 10 seconds. If after 10 seconds you're not seeing any traffic, timeout that request. This basically says the exact same thing, but it's just basically applying that parameter to that balancer. You're not actually doing any reverse proxying with this command. You're basically just setting some configurations inside there. It all depends on how you want to set up. Some people don't like having really, really long proxy pass statements where they're bundling the wiring with all the specifics of how it's set.
So proxy pass would be a global setting for that balancer?
Yes. Yes. In the same way that it would be for right here as well. Clear? Okay. All the data is stored in shared memory for really, really nice fast access. I won't go into this, but obviously, you know, if you have a connection pool, you want to be able to configure that. And here are some other ones as well. Oh, this is a really nice one for Tomcat. Every once in a while, especially if you're talking AJP between HTTPD AJP between HTTPD and Tomcat. Some firewalls don't understand the AJP protocol. And so what they'll do is they'll tear down the socket, but you won't know it's torn down. And so Apache will keep on trying to send these requests until finally it figures out it's timed out and things like that. What you can do is say, I'm not going to use the connection port. I want to create a socket every time it opens to avoid that kind of situation. That's a really, really kludgy fix, basically saying you're relying on the TCP/IP stack to basically handle an error condition being generated from a firewall. Sometimes you need that in the cases, and sometimes when you do, you definitely need it. Support for sticky sessions. The nice thing about Tomcat is that you can do it very, very natively with JSON ID. You have any other app server on the background, and you've got to create that all on your own. It's not part of the actual protocol itself. And finally, we're going to be talking a little bit about failover control. As I talked before, I talked about half standby and how we cycle through. I'm going to show this really semi-complete example right here. The whole idea behind this is that we have setting up two balancer sections right here, where we're having a PHP-based application server in the background and a Tomcat application server right here. Anything that's coming in for /apps will be going to the PHP server. Anything that's coming in for /serve will be going to the Java app server. In this situation right here, we're talking any request that comes in, whether it's HTTP, HTTPS, whether it's H2, H2C, whatever Apache is talking to the browser, we can talk differently to the back end. So no matter what's coming in right here, we're going to be sending those requests to Tomcat on the back end via AJP, the AJP protocol, and that's what we're determining it right here. We're saying that TC1 is 1/4 the beefiness. Again, what's really worried about that is just the normalization. 1 to 4 is the same as 10 to 40. It's just how you want to determine things and how much fine tune you want to have over that. We're going to be going ahead and balancing those requests, jockeying those requests between those two servers by looking at the number of requests. With the PHP servers, we're looking at it actually here by traffic. Here we have a little bit of an example of different levels of failover with PHP. We saw the scenario before where PHP 1 and PHP 2, if they're up and running, that's fine. If 1 and 2 go away, only PHP backup will kick in. Now what happens is that if PHP backup goes away, okay, what we're doing is we're setting up another failover, another class of failovers, which right here is load balancer set 1, which saying if all those three go away, then and only then are we using this even more expensive PHP server that's remote, has a lot of latency for it and stuff like that. We're spending a lot of money for it. That's sort of like our fallback failover. If you just had that as a status plus H, as a hot standby, you couldn't determine which of those would be next in the scenario. So the combination of a hot standby and LB set allows you to fine-tune where that failover comes in. And so if we had something, down here, LB set 3, then that would be the third worst scenario and the fourth worst scenario. So by using that, you can generate huge clusters and define very clearly what that failover scenario is. We also noticed that not only can you do, obviously, the balancers, but again, we're still using the normal traditional one-to-one mapping of anything coming in for a specific URL goes to a back end right here. We also support, as I said before, talking on the back end, clear text to a back end. And finally, we have support for Unix domain sockets. So if you have Tomcat running on the exact same server as your Apache web server, you don't have to worry about, firing up even a local loop. You can just, talk on the domain socket right there very fast. Any questions? Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Right, yeah. I mean, you know, there's, as you said before, there's a lot more inside of how to determine what that actual mapping is, as well as you're able to do it now with, you know, the newer advanced version of Apache DBD, and the dynamic runtime configuration changed that as well. So there's a lot of different ways of doing it. There's a lot more meat as far as how to say, okay, I want requests for here, but don't proxy pass this, even though an alternate proxy pass command would have set that. So yeah, there's a lot more. Another nice thing that we have is that sometimes all you want is something that is basically like an HTTP router. You know, it takes an incoming request and it sends something out of the back end. Nothing fancy. Things for like, you know, microservices. Really, really good example. You know exactly where the incoming request is going to be, where it needs to go to. Now, one way of doing that is just to create a shit ton of, you know, configuration parameters inside of your Apache configuration file and just plop, 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 plop. Even if you're using something like Mod Macro or something like that, that is really, really painful. And it also means that every time you add or remove a service, you would need to change the configuration file and do a graceful restart. That's pretty, pretty nasty. What we actually have inside here is what we call Mod Proxy Express. It's basically a map file that says anything that's coming in for this this request right here goes to that backend server. So the mapping is just this to that, that to that, you know. And you basically create that, and then you create a DBM file from that. And then you use these two configuration parameters, proxy express enable on, and where that DB file is. And it, as soon as you do that, Apache will start doing that mapping for you. Okay. If you need to change anything in real time, you just change this map file, create another DB file, and Apache will immediately take up that change. So it doesn't require any configuration changes to Apache, doesn't require any graceful restarts. It basically just a nice little map file that says, this is the incoming request, this is where the backend goes to. You know, yes? Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah, these are this in this particular situation, it assumes that there's, you know, that the proxy pass and the proxy pass reverse mappings are the exact same. Yes?
And configuration
requires a reload or a if you're changing the Apache configuration file, if instead you were doing it this way, whoops. If you were doing it this way in the Apache, then yeah. You would need to do a graceful restart because you want Apache to reread the configuration file. And so it would go through and read this huge, you know, huge slew. You know, this is much quicker. The inspiration behind this was basically the mass virtual host module, if people remember that from long, long ago. I won't talk about that. And the biggest thing I think that's really, really cool is that we have a balancer manager that enables you to see in real time what's going on with reverse proxy mapping, as well as being able to change some of these parameters inside here. So you can add new backend nodes, you can turn them off, any changes are persistent and stuff like that. Very easy to set up if you're familiar with Apache setup. And let me just go and give you a quick little screen snap demo. So right here, I'm going to the balancer manager. You see we have some of these parameters right here. These are the backend nodes. These are the settings for them. I clicked one, I'm disabling it, and as soon as I did that, it changed right here to disabled. It happens in real time. Now I'm changing it, the different load balancing method. Once I hit click, then again, it changes. So we're changing that again. I want to add a new server because basically we're pulling up a new backend server in here. We want to be able to fold that in back into the farm using this web admin. Yeah, you're defining it, you're clicking make sure, and it's added. It's set as disabled initially because you may want to change some of the configuration parameters and things of that nature. So we just go and click. We say, okay, I want to enable it now, and now it's back in the pool when it starts taking up traffic. This is great, but what happens if for some reason you need to take down your front-end server or change its configuration? You've lost all those changes. Well, you would think you would lose all those changes, but actually not. What I did right here was just turned off Apache, turned it back on again, and you'll see all the changes that we made are persisted against not only a restart, but also, you know, a turn off and tear down and turn back up again. So it doesn't change the actual configuration file. What it does is changes, it stores in a shared memory segment the delta between what's in the configuration file and what's running. And then once you restart Apache, it'll look for that shared configuration file, which has been spit out into a file, read that in, apply that change, and then go ahead with it. If you're using mod status to see what's going on inside of Apache, then all those parameters in there are for you as well. Even though it's a web interface, it's actually kind of RESTful, so you can actually use curl to do all that kind of stuff. So just because this example was using a web interface where somebody's actually, you know, dragging and clicking and crapping and stuff like that, that's not the way you need to do it. You can actually just, you know, use a shell script and do all the parameters you want inside there. The last thing I want to talk about a little bit is just the performance aspect as compared to, you know, maybe other web servers out there. Somewhat old, you know, presentation, but I kind of keep track of it, you know. And we see that in general, Apache web server, these are all, you know, as reverse proxies, is very, very, very performant. I've also done some test cases between Apache and Nginx as a reverse proxy using the event NPM. And basically, their performance characteristics are very, very similar. One of the nice things about Apache, again, before, is that in addition to the full event asynchronous, you can also use the prefork NPM. If what's important to you as a reverse proxy is consistency as far as what that request response performance is, there's a lot of fuzz, a lot of, you know, variability inside here. We saw that same thing with the event NPM here. Because you are, that is time frame. That's milliseconds. Lower, better. Yeah. Basically, it's saying this is how long it took to do an open on the connection. This is how long it took to read, write, close. So it's basically looking at the exact request response time frame and the time associated with each of those phases inside there. A different way of looking at it, again, looking at the various NPMs and compare it to Nginx. Sorry that the actual colors didn't come through. But basically, it's showing that there isn't really a lot that performance-wise differentiates Apache 2.4 and Nginx, you know, nowadays. I've got more information about that Thursday if you're interested in it. And finally, we do have the ability to do dynamic health checks. So as I said before Apache will send something to the back end, it will go and do a ping or a pong or something like that. But that's done right before it sends a request. It'd be nice to know that beforehand. And that's what happens right here, is that we're able to do dynamic health checking on the back end. Right here, we're doing it via a GET request on the back end server. Basically, every 10 seconds or so, or whatever the setting is right here, it accesses status.php, and it looks for the expression that says in maintenance. If it sees that, it automatically takes it out of the farm. Because it's doing a GET request on this, it gets the response back, it screen snatches the response and looks for this in the web server body. Right here, we're just doing a head request. Right here, we're just doing a TCP socket, you know, request. Hey, is there somebody on the other line? So again, you can get as sophisticated, you can get as efficient, or get as deep and detailed as you want as far as what these health checks are concerned. You can look at request status, you know, whether anything that starts with a 200, 300, 400, you know, that's fine. You know, let's keep things going. We're going to be adding more stuff. Actually, that has been added already, so that's kind of old. The biggest thing is also I want to finally get the Redis caching protocol inside here. Even though I haven't talked about it, it's most probably one of the biggest benefits, as I said before, about being a reverse proxy, is being able to cache all this static information. You know, if you can avoid going to that back end, then definitely do so. And so we have been putting a lot of work into the caching module and the caching capability inside here. Also, you know, for anybody who might be from the PHP land, PHP FPM works like a fiend nowadays. We're always adding performance, always doing better. And finally, performance dynamic control is something that HTTPD really excels at. So if you're front-ending Tomcat or anything else on the back end, please feel free to give HTTPD another check. And here is another redo of my thank you page. Yes? Right. Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. I mean, there used to be a day where if you wanted to get the best performance, front-ending Tomcat, you would say AJP because the back-end HTTP connectors just weren't good. That's not the case nowadays. In fact, I would say just talk HTTP, even though it's not totally binary, if there are problems, well, most, Wireshark and stuff like that, natively translate the HTTP protocol for you. But sometimes it's just nice being able to do a telnet into something, and find out what's going on. So performance-wise, I personally don't think there's any, rationale for not using Tomcat's HTTP listener, either as its own independent web server out there in the front or as a backend. I don't like having an application server, something that's actually generating dynamic content outside of the DMZ. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Tomcat works perfectly fine with that. No issues at all. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it depends on where you want to do some of that stuff. If you want, how sophisticated you want Apache to sort of like be that choke point as far as correct URLs and things like that. But yeah, there was one. Yes.
We have
a
big application server running in China. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the internet is latency. I mean, anytime, and depending on the number of hops it requires to get there, would be, without knowing more about the actual architecture and the design, that would be part of and parcel. Yeah, so you would have to factor that in if you're thinking about what the end user experience is going to be and what that total request response time frame is for them to do that. You would have to factor those latencies in for how long it would take to send the request there for them to actually handle and generate content and then send it back. That would be one of the good things for looking at is how much of that can you cache locally on the front end so that way you're not sending that request back. We do speak WebSockets. I mean, the Apache web server does do a reverse proxy WebSocket. So maybe I didn't specify that. But yeah, we do have WebSocket support. WebSockets. Yeah, so we have WS and WSS, WebSockets and WebSocket Secure. We support that as reverse proxy to anything on the back end. The exact same thing. The only thing you change is just what, instead of AJP dot colon colon slash slash, it would be WS or WSS. Yes?
If I want caching and proxy, so static content that lives truly on the back end server, do I need to worry about ordering or anything, or
can
I just configure my cache and configure my proxy?
You just configure your cache and configure your proxy. That's it, yeah. Yes? Personally, I don't think so. You know, especially with HTTP 2, which a lot of the benefits of AGP is that, you know, it. But anybody who's more of a Tomcat AGP fan, yes. Yeah, unfortunately, we are out of time. I am here all week. And like I said, I've got two talks on Thursday about Apache, and I will talk a little bit about this. So if you have any other questions, just grab me. Thank you for attending, and have a great conference.